What's up, everybody? This is Big Nate, and this is the podcast. Let's talk about creepy stuff. Pretty self-explanatory. We're going to talk about creepy stuff. Places, things, people, anything creepy. It's always been an interest of mine. So stay tuned, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So this is going to be my second episode of the day. I wanted to leave two because I feel like I kind of slacked off just a tad for the past little stint here. My goal is to record as many as I can right when I feel the urge because I'm just not very good with timelines. So if I record a lot, at least if there's a week or so that I miss or whatever, there should be plenty of episodes to listen to. And so this creepy episode is going to cover something most of you are probably familiar with, but it is the Perrin family that lived in a farmhouse that was haunted, and most people know the movie series that was made after it, which is called The Conjuring. This was one of the inspirations behind The Conjuring series that's been, you know, the several movies that have been released. And so I kind of wanted to dive into what inspired it all. And so it was based on something true. Now, we know how Hollywood works. They, you know, make things a little more, you know, dramatic and add a little flavor to it. But there is like a little drop of truth in some of these movies. Now, I'm the type that when the evidence stacks up in one direction, I tend to believe it, because when someone says, or multiple people give an account of something and there's a lot of documentation to back it up, you know, I believe that there's, you know, at least 90% of what we're getting is the truth. And so I'm going to try to cover this, and hopefully if you don't know some of the things I'm going to mention, you'll learn something from this. And so this is a very, very creepy story. Honestly, if I were to write down all the things that I took from, I guess would be the word, that I learned from about this case, we'd be here for a week. And so I can't mention them all. So I try to mention some of the most relevant sources that I really use. One was Ranker.com, AllThat'sInteresting.com. Obviously, the Conjuring movies have a few things that are touched on that were based on the actual events, but apparently they were watered down because the real events were so scary and horrible. You pretty much would need to go read the book to know what they are. There's a book by Andrew Perrin called House of Darkness, House of Light, and you know, you can go read that. She writes her personal account of the book. I've listened to Andrea Perrin on so many different things. She was one of the kids that made it through this house, and they tell the story today. A lot of people don't like it when people try to make money off this stuff, and I'm like, think about it. If you've been through something horrible and you could at least make a profit off of it, wouldn't you? I mean, yeah, you would. So to me, it doesn't get rid of the validity of it. Also, Ed and Lorraine Warren, famous paranormal investigators, were heavily involved in this case. Though it was portrayed that they did a lot in the movies to help solve the issues, they apparently really didn't do anything but maybe stir some things up. But they were there, so that account was true. So, without further ado, with all that out of the way, let's get into it. When the Perrins purchased and moved into their new house, the oddest thing right off the bat that happened wasn't exactly paranormal. It was actually some advice that their neighbors threw their way for free. And they said, for the sake of your family, leave the lights on at night. Now, I don't know about you, but if somebody, my neighbors, decided to give me that friendly advice, I would think, holy poop, what did I step into, you know? But that's apparently the advice they got. And of course, not that far of a jog away, that advice, they realized why they got it, because they began experiencing paranormal activity in their home. Pretty much, it started off light, I would say light, but like, it's so weird when I read about the light version of what they mean. It would be stuff that would creep me the heck out. Like things were moving. They heard weird noises all the time. And they were seeing things from time to time they couldn't explain, like people and stuff like that. It just was odd. It was stuff to me that wasn't considered light, but I guess technically it was harmless. It didn't hurt them. It was just kind of spooky. Cynthia Perrin, in an interview, said that there were a lot of small things, like I said, I don't know if I would call them small, happening, and nobody really talked about them. They just kind of, meh, maybe I'm seeing stuff, it's an old house, it makes noises, maybe we forgot to put something there, and we actually had it placed over there. But here's what she said. Things would either be moved all around in a different position than how I left them, or they would all be shoved up underneath the bed. And I would go to my sister's, of course. You'd go to your sister's, is what she says, and ask, hey, what did you do with my toys? And they'd say, nothing. Why would I mess with your toys, Cindy? And so they kind of just think, they're not really thinking about the ghost side of it. They're just thinking that all this stuff's explainable. But unfortunately, these kind of innocent, or at least harmless, those spooky things wouldn't, you know, be the only thing they had to worry about over time. So, after moving into their, what they consider their dream home, and they still have good things to say about the house, though bad things happen there. Right off the bat, the parents figured out that they were living with ghosts. And so, the first half of the haunting, the parent children thought that most of the ghosts and the things they were seeing, you know, the things that that hung around and caused these small, air quotes, I'm doing it with my fingers, the things that caused these small things were probably nice. If not anything, they were harmless. They weren't really doing anything to them. But they were experiencing things they couldn't explain. So the five parent children, they claimed that they saw these entities and experienced their presence and stuff like that. And they even felt like maybe they were like babysitters for a time. Apparently at nighttime, they would feel somebody tuck them in and kiss them on the forehead. By the way, I would have not even let it get that far. If I see a ghost or even feel one around me doing these things, you better believe I'm sleeping outside. And I bless homes, okay? Like, I do that. And, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said it's not spooky to go in a home where strange activities happening and they want me to bless it. I'm like, yeah, I mean, you're going to be on edge when that happens. So I can only think these kids laying in bed and they're like, oh, some unseen force is tucking me in and kissing my forehead. I'd be so out of there. Cynthia and Andrea Perrin remember that this certain ghost that would come and tuck them in and stuff, like there was a smell that would come along with it, like ivory soap, or not ivory soap, like flowers, because they were trying, like, they said there'd be like a fruity, flowery smell every time this ghost entity thing would tuck them in, and they knew it wasn't their mother because she always smelled like ivory soap. That's what she used all the time to bathe in, and so that's what she always smelled like, so they knew it wasn't her. So, after a while, you kind of get used to it, I guess, and nothing bad is necessarily happening, so the parent family have just moved on, and they're living their lives, you know, YOLO kind of thing. But it didn't take long for certain evil entities to begin infiltrating their little slice of heaven on the farm. The Perrin girls were being attacked in the barn by unseen entities. And one night, a series of voices began to speak to them about bodies in the walls. Yeah, that would be... I don't know why, but that song by Drowning Pool came to mind. You know, let the bodies hit the float. You know, I don't know why. I'm a nerd. But Andrea Perrin claims that her sister Cindy got in bed with her and while they were getting ready for bed. And she got in bed with her one night and told her about a voice she was hearing that kept repeating this same eerie statement. And there wasn't a source for this voice, but she could hear it being whispered or said to her. And this is one of the quotes. Andrea said, she'd say, Annie, I keep hearing these voices. It's one voice, but it's a lot of voices, but they're all saying the same thing at once. And I'd say, honey, what are they saying? And she'd say, there are seven dead soldiers buried in the wall. I got chills saying that because how creepy. So, while the girls are dealing with this kind of stuff, and it's escalating into downright creepiness, we're not talking about just a broom moved from one room, one side of the room to the other. We're hearing voices and creepy stuff's going down. So, this was just the beginning. And so they claim that at 5:15 in the morning, the smell began to just go through their house, just this waft of nasty smell. It smelled like rotting flesh. It would just go through the house, and it would go through the house, tossing everybody out of bed one by one. And Andrea claims that around this time, the girls were experiencing a night visitor that was some kind of male ghost, and it tortured them. And she won't even give any details about it because it bothered her so bad. And apparently, she says, let's just say there was a very bad male spirit in the home with five little girls. And that bothers me to no end. That is so messed up. Oh. So while the Perrin family are having these encounters of the paranormal kind, pretty much through the whole time they're living in the house, Carolyn Perrin, which is the mom of all the girls, pretty much seemed to be the most sensitive to all the ghosts and things inhabiting the home. In an interview with the Providence Journal, she says that she knew something was wrong when a woman in gray appeared by her bed saying, "Get out, get out, I'll drive you out with death and gloom." Yep, I think I would leave. I think I would build a tent outside and never come back. When people leave, I can't say because I don't own, you know, it's hard. Like, I get it. Like, you can't just up and move. You got five kids and, you know, it's hard. But apparently they think that this woman in the gray dress was a historical figure they had looked up named Bathsheba, Bathsheba Thayer. And everybody believed that she was a witch and she hung herself. And they think that her spirit might have been, you know, one that was haunting the facility. Now, this goes bad on me, but I believe the story was that Bathsheba hung herself in their barn that was located on the property. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's right. Sorry, I didn't look that up in depth. But either way, that would make sense because that's why she's haunting the home. So, Andrea, the eldest daughter, says whoever the spirit was, she perceived herself to be the mistress of the house, and she resented the competition my mom posed for that position, which I guess would make sense. They said that in the beginning, and they gave the name Bathsheba just so they could label this malevolent entity. They said that at first, the things that were happening weren't exactly just horrible. It was more like they'd get pinched by something unseen or poked, prodded, you know, things, but they couldn't see anything, and so nobody was around, and so when they would get these sensations, they knew it was this ghost. But then things just started climbing higher and higher on the freak out scale. Like, things started getting creepier and creepier. The parents believed that Bathsheba wanted them to leave the home, and the only way that she was going to get them to do that was by torturing the mother of the home, Carolyn. So when physically attacking Carolyn didn't work, the parents claimed that Bathsheba inhabited Carolyn's body to better horrify them. They believed that she became possessed by Bathsheba, the mother of the family did. And they pretty much, you know, think that she was just trying to drive them out of this home. And Carolyn became a different person. Like, she didn't want to eat is one thing I heard. And she just became a whole nother person, and she became weak and emotionally drained. And she was otherwise, you know, before any of this happened, she was a very strong woman that, and you'd have to be to mother five kids. Now, granted, mom and dad had a good, you know, they were, mom and dad were married, and, you know, the dad worked. And so the mom had to stay at home with the kids as it was common back then. And so she was a strong woman that led the household, but then she began to get weaker and not herself, and they believed that Bathsheba was possessing her, causing this to happen. And so apparently at one point there was actually what they called a broom ghost that was known to sweep up the kitchen whenever nobody was there. It's just like there's just random ghosts they believed in the house that would clean their kitchen, which, you know, hey, awesome. Don't have to clean the kitchen. Not awesome. I don't want ghosts in my house ever. There was a comedian one time that said, you ever notice that only rich people that own houses are the ones that deal with ghosts? And I know the parents weren't exactly rich, but I was thinking about it, and he was like, you know, you deserve a ghost because you own your house, and I think you deserve it. And he said, in fact, he said, if you're so rich and you own a duvet, I think you need two ghosts and a gremlin. He said, you don't ever hear about these apartments being haunted. It's always these houses. That was a side note. It had nothing to do with the story. All right, so I was at Broom Ghost. Now, the Warrens became involved, and the way that the movie portrays that they got involved is, I believe the mother actually goes to one of their things, one of their talks they did at a college, but it was actually not how it happened. The family didn't exactly reach out to the Warrens, but according to Andrea, a family friend went to see the Warrens when they were giving their talk in Putnam, Connecticut. And Cynthia Perrin backs up that claim in the same interview. She says Barbara is the one that went to the lecture and told them about us, and they were like, oh, we've got to go over there. Now, there's mixed emotions with the Warrens. A lot of people think they're shysters. Some people think they're legitimate, and I'll just keep my opinion to myself. So, either way, they got involved because they heard the story, and they were the ones that reached out. It was a family friend that just told them about what was going on. So, after Carolyn, the mother of the Perrin family, allegedly became possessed with Bathsheba, the Perrins decided to work with Ed and Lorraine Warren. They got in touch because the Warrens reached out to him. But then after over time, they went ahead and let Ed and Lorraine step in and try to help. Lorraine Warren, which Ed and Lorraine, they're a married couple that worked as a team on these paranormal investigations. Lorraine claims that she sensed a dark presence in the house right when she stepped up to it. She knew right away something was evil in the house. But, you know, I mean, when you come into a home full of freaked out people telling you all this stuff, I mean, you're going to feel some negativity coming off of that. I mean, these poor kids are experiencing something, and they consider it evil, and their mom's health is deteriorating. I mean, they have a broom ghost. Like, you know, stuff is weird. And so the energy coming into this home probably wasn't exactly hype train. It was probably very, very dark. So, according to the Perrins, the Warrens did some kind of cleansing of the home and conducted a seance with Carolyn in the family's basement. But unfortunately, the seance didn't go as planned, and everything hit the fan when they decided to do this. Side note, yes, I'm a Christian minister, so I'm going to throw it out there. Do not do seances. For the love of all that's holy. I see these paranormal investigators do this stuff, and I'm like, way to just open the devil's door there. You know, way to go. Like, I don't know why people are so intrigued with, I mean, I get the intrigue, but like, why they go the step of trying to conjure something. I'm like, this never ends good, ever. In fact, when I've blessed homes, one of which I blessed, they had stuff happen there all the time because people tried to conjure things in the home. And I'm like, yeah, of course, it always ends bad like this. So anyway, sidebar from me. The Warrens visited the Perrin family over the course of pretty much, let's just say, a long time. I don't really have a fix. My notes say the next decade. They pretty much just came over all the time, but they never fixed anything. Lorraine apparently never publicly discussed what happened during the seance, but she claims that what happened in the basement disturbed her to the core. She says the things that went on there were just so incredibly frightening. It still affects me to talk about it today. But Andrea Perrin gives us a little bit of some visual aid when it comes to what happened during this seance in the basement. She tells that everybody that, yeah, what happened was spooky. She wasn't supposed to be watching. She had snuck into the basement, and I think in one source it was the kitchen, but then some people say the basement. So either way, I've heard this story multiple times, and the story's still the same, no matter, you know, I've only heard two places, the basement and the kitchen. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But either way, they were doing the seance. They told the kids to go to bed. Once again, disclaimer, don't do seances. They're stupid. But apparently there was a priest there during this and a medium. How they were working together, I don't know. But this is a corroborated story between Andrea Perrin, between the family, between Lorraine Warren. Lorraine passed away. I can't remember how long ago, and Ed had passed away before her. But while she was alive, she claims that, yeah, there's some weird stuff happened, and so did Ed. But apparently, Andrea decides she just can't resist, so she sneaks down to see what in the world they're doing, and was looking through a crack in the door. And after this, she wished she had never done it. She said, "My mother began to speak a language not of this world in a voice not her own. Her chair levitated, and she was thrown across the room." Apparently, her mom was sitting on a chair, and she literally grabbed her legs and pulled them up by her face while she was in this chair and was just, like, violently screeching in this language nobody knew, and actually got picked up, levitated, thrown. Apparently, the priest was so freaked out, he was just backed up in a corner, which, hey, I don't blame the guy. And it pretty much, as Andrea Perrin says, all hell broke loose. So, if you remember The Conjuring, which, by the way, I'm weird about movies like that, that were made based off these things, because it just doesn't seem good. But if you remember The Conjuring, there's a series of games, and I've seen them. Okay, these are years old now. Keep that in mind. There's a series of games of, like, hide and clap. It's like hide and seek, but the kid would clap until the person found them. And they would run off and hide, but these, like, in the scenes, you know, in the movie, the mom is being taunted by these ghostly clapping hands, like, you know, like, basically not belonging to the girls, and she's following them around. It's really spooky, but apparently it was a lot more sinister than that in real life. The hide and clap scenes are pretty downright spooky, but the real thing was a lot more, you know, it was a lot scarier. Cynthia Perrin claims that one day the girls were playing hide and seek on the farm, and she found this pine box that didn't have a lock or a latch or anything like that, and it didn't have ventilation either. But she could fit in it, and so she jumped in and hid in there. And after nobody found her, she decided to find a new hiding place because, yeah, breathing in that thing wasn't fun. This is what she told an interviewer about that experience. She said, "I shoved up to get out of the wood box, but it wouldn't open. And I'm pushing and pushing, and then I started to really get scared and panic. So I'm kicking and pushing and screaming, and nobody can hear me. And finally, after like 20 minutes of this, I basically gave up." So how she got out was her sister Nancy came along and just opened the box. And she jumps out, freaked out. So there was no lock on it, and so some force outside of the box was holding it shut. So one of the biggest inquiries people have is, why would they stay there for this? Why wouldn't they get out? Because they lived in the home for like 9 years, and the whole time they're seeing supernatural stuff, both good and bad, but a lot of bad's breaking out. It just wasn't financially possible. They had honestly bitten off a little more than they could chew when they got the home. And so they just didn't have the money. And the dad, the more that you listen, he just didn't believe. And he wasn't there for a lot of this. He was working. So he didn't see all this. It was mostly the girls. And so he really didn't believe them. During the seance, though, apparently he's there. The dad's there for that. And he did not want this to happen. Because he was a skeptic, he didn't believe. And apparently when his wife gets picked up and thrown, that'll make any skeptic think twice. But apparently he ran toward her, you know, like a good husband to save his wife. And Ed Warren tried to stop him, and he punched Ed in the face. He was like, "Get off me, dude. I'm getting to my wife." Side note there. But they didn't have anywhere to go. And so they were just kind of stuck. Andrea Perrin also notes that the property value on their 200-acre farm was devaluing by the day. The family would have been destitute if, this is her a quote from her, if we had just walked away from that house. In 1980, the Perrin family was finally able to sell the house, though, and as soon as the paperwork was signed, they got the poo out of there. They ran as fast as they could, got to Georgia, and they never looked back. Now, according to the Perrin family, they're still being haunted by Bathsheba Thayer, they believe. During the filming of The Conjuring, they got to be on set. You know, they got to go and see how everything was going. And initially, they were all going to go, but at the last minute, Carolyn, the mother, got cold feet and changed her mind. She was like, you know, I just don't want to experience any of this again. She just wanted to leave it as it was. And after her traumatic experience, I don't blame her. So Andrea Perrin claims that while the family was being interviewed, a wind out of nowhere just blew over the family, and it knocked down cameras, lights, it knocked anything down, you know, around them. And they all agreed it was Bathsheba's curse. It wasn't until they got back to their hotels that night that they heard about their mom falling and breaking her hip at the exact same time that the wind swept over them on the interview on set. So when the family made it to their mom's hospital room, they claimed that she sat up and said, Bathsheba's curse, she does not want to be exposed. According to Andrea Perrin, everyone who has lived in the house that we know of has experienced this. Some have left screaming and running for their lives. The man who moved in to begin the restoration on the house when we sold it left screaming without his car, without his tools, and without his clothing. He never went back to the house, and consequently, the people who owned it, the adjacent landowners, never moved in, and it sat vacant for years. So, when they finally moved, the stuff calmed down. But then everybody that tried to take it on for a long time, most people had bad experiences and did crazy stuff, like ran out of there without their clothes and their car. To this day, right like now, Corey and Jennifer Heinzen bought the farmhouse, formerly known as the Old Arnold's Estate, in June of 2019, and have already documented several instances of paranormal activity. You can look up several investigations done in this home by different paranormal investigators. Like, I think even Zach Bagans went in there on Halloween, I think, maybe. I don't know. But you can look it up on YouTube. And there's different people experiencing a lot of different things. I watched one of them, and it was like a book fell out of a shelf by itself and all kinds of stuff. It's just super, super odd and creepy. And so, yeah, in a nutshell, that's the story, the true story behind the Conjuring House. My advice? Don't do seances, don't dabble, whatever. You like the creepy stuff? Observe. You want to get involved? Probably shouldn't do that. So, yeah. But anyway, guys, I did two of these today, so I'm taking a break from the podcasting for the next couple days, I think. But I'm going to try to keep loading episodes every time I'm in the mood, which is usually every day, but I have to try to push it off so I don't overdo myself. I really want this thing to just be very cool, fluid, flowy, be like my stress relief, you know. And so I hope you enjoy the stories. I try to keep them light and keep the best parts in without all the detail, because some people like it like that. And so that's the way I want to do it, keep it at least 20 to 40 minutes in that realm. So anyways, guys, tune in for the next one.